just to hear from folks who are participating kind of some of the themes that you took away. And I don't know if you noticed, we had a bonus article this month, so we actually had 6 articles instead of the normal 5, but fortunately fairly short. So who would like to take it away? Craig, I see you're unmuted, so I'm going to call on you.
All right, sure. You know, I had a hard time finding themes in this batch of articles. They really seem to be pretty disparate. You know, a couple of them had some themes around power and hierarchy, but then the others did not. So I had a hard time really finding a really strong theme among them.
Yeah, no, I'll go next. For me, you know, I struggled a little bit as well, but as Craig did, but I thought underlying, if you unpack it a little bit, there's a lot about interdependence and interdependency, whether you're talking collaboration, coordination, or, Dan's article, for example, on collaboration and coordination. So I said role clarity sort of shows up a number of times, and this whole notion of interdependence, right? You can't have collaboration and coordination unless you understand how the things fit together and how they work. So I went sort of one level deeper and said, yeah, I can make some connections that way.
Jody, how about you?
Hi, Neola and everyone. Yeah, so I got for most, but not all of the articles, a theme of deliberately designing to create culture. And quite a few of them, I think, were a lot around the details, which I really like really the concrete details of design, and maybe something on transparency.
Interesting. Jardina, if you'd like to chime in.
Sure. I'll echo what Craig said. I really did see power woven throughout, which I was happy to see, because I think that that's an important thing for us to be talking about. It's a stretch to tie it to some of the articles, but I think it was kind of at least a thread.
Gina, how about you?
I thought the theme was inclusion for the things that everyone just said. It was across up and down the hierarchy, as well as more broadly across the organization.
Interesting. Thank you. And then I know, Diane, you were also participating. Your thoughts?
Yeah, the two words that summed it up for me was power sharing. At least I saw a little bit of thread throughout each article. Coordinating work was another thing that kind of jumped throughout, but power sharing was the phrase that, for me, kind of pulled them together.
All right. And then last but not least, Janet.
Hey, everybody. So I had power and coordination and pulled them together into cohesion, which is probably quite similar to Paul's interdependence.
Great. Okay, so that was our first sort of initial thoughts around. I mean, I know when I was reading them, I think sort of the pieces around coordination, power came up, and also kind of in the service of inclusion. So I think that was kind of some, a little harder to kind of connect some of it, but I think there were some things in common across the articles this month. Right, so my next question is really to kind of hear from the team, which of the articles kind of had the biggest, I think, resonated the most for you? We have a question. Which article did you find most useful? Okay, so the one that really popped for you. And there are our 6 articles. So we've got a quick poll here. So I invite everybody who read the articles to really kind of pick their top article. All right, Tanya, you're gonna. All right, interesting. So 50% picked the Kate Kessler one, the organization design for diversity, equity, and inclusion, which was actually the first article in the list. And then we had kind of three tied runners up, that nuts and bolts article, the psychological safety article, and then that last one, the design of corporate headquarters, which was in some ways the, I think, the most different for me personally of the articles. So I'd love to hear from everyone why they chose what they did. I'm gonna change the order a bit. Gina, how about you?
I was on the majority there with the Kate Kessler one. I thought it was a nice summary, and one thing I'd emphasize in that is not to lose sight of the low-hanging fruit. It started off with an anecdote around how the two people who were always remote finally felt included. Now we can easily include many more people by simply making everyone get remote. So right there, that's a very simple thing to do that doesn't require reorganizations, restructurings, and that sort of thing. The other thing is you can have larger groups. So there's some other, a couple other things there, but that was a really nice summary of things to look at, especially process. I think we tend not to look at processes. The one for me that's always a bugbear is hiring. It's a miserable black box for everyone. It's unfair to everyone in my observation and experience as well. So looking at processes, I thought was a great thing to emphasize as well. And that article did.
Okay, thank you. Diane, which did you pick as your most useful?
I picked one, but I didn't click fast enough. I picked the task uncertainty. So I was the one person that picked that. I mean, I loved all the articles, to be honest. I'm going to go back and read them again. But I picked that one because it kind of brought me back to self-organized teams. And they, even though they're self-organized, they still need coordination. That was like one of my key takeaways. And power sharing is a big part of that. So that task uncertainty, and there was a lot of really practical stuff too, way to approach that. So I it took me too long to pick because I like them all, but I picked that one because that stood out for me.
Great, thanks. Jardina, what was your top pick?
Thank you. My top pick was the, psychological safety for self-organizing teams. Because there was just so much in that article that I hadn't seen before. Mm-hmm. And I run into that a lot where you try and implement some self-organization and there's a lot of resistance and people will say to me, it's going to be like Lord of the Flies, which is, if you haven't read the book where they all like kill each other at the end. right. So, and my answer to that is always like, you're just not ready. You know, I don't say that, but I'm just always thinking you're just not mature enough, but this really unpacked what's behind that fear and how to mitigate it. And I hadn't seen that before. So I thought that this was really unusual. And then the concept of unaccountable power was new for me too, of, you know, that creates some confusion when people, you know, do a power grab and then it's unchecked. And all of those dynamics were, I thought they were unpacked beautifully. And he gave some good tips for solutions.
Thank you. Paul, love to hear your choice.
Yeah, I voted for Amy's article first. That was sort of my number one. And the reason for it was it came at a time where I was struggling with how do I, in my work, deal with these kinds of issues? How do I raise the question? How do I, these issues are, you're blind to them until you're not, you know? And so I thought taking something that we all know, like the Galbraith Star, and operationalizing it through that lens, diversity and inclusion, was really helpful. I loved, in the one part, Amy talks about questions you could be asking, right? So for me, the timing was really good because I've been struggling with how do I play a role in some way? So it was my number one. I actually really liked the two articles, the psychological safety and the using power dynamic as well. They were a close second for me. And a lot of it is because what we forget is that oftentimes it looks chaotic. And if there isn't order beneath it, it is chaotic, right? And sort of both of these sort of spoke to between psychological safety and creating role clarity and role definition, whether it's power decisions or whatever. So Amy's was really, really timely, and the other two really hit me as well.
Great, thank you. Jody, how about you?
Yeah, this was a difficult choice because I actually really liked actually all of the articles this time. I voted for the bonus article, the Andrew Campbell's article. I found that super well written and smart, and it was just for, it just resonated really strongly for the kind of corporate headquarter organizations that I know. And it was written in a way, I think, that even if you were, you know, if you were that kind of organization, you would understand what he was saying. And so I actually sent it to, you know, some of the strategy people inside corporate headquarters from my network, thinking that, you know, this would be really super intelligent and useful way for them to look at what they're doing, connecting with strategy and value. So that's why I chose that one.
Thank you. And then Janet.
I'm like Diane. I was also too slow and interestingly enough, chose the same article. So maybe some psychologist could assess that. So I also really enjoyed the coordination article. But my second choice was the GitLab article, and probably the context is that I'm busy trying to finish off my master's and doing a lot of thinking around collaboration and how we facilitate and enable connection much more effectively. Funnily enough, I read something earlier today, and I'm just trying to remember if it was one of these articles or something else, excuse me, that was talking about collaboration, but on such a superficial level. You know, just because we're all connected doesn't mean we're collaborating. And so I think, yeah, for me, both of those spoke into that. What technical mechanism can we put in place to enable more effective collaboration? But then the social, so both that social and technical piece, I think are really interesting at the moment.
Right. And then last but not least, Craig.
Yes, you know, I like Amy's article as well, but I picked the GitLab one as the favorite. And part of it, well, two things. I liked Amy's article because it's a really practical way of looking at the STAR and applying the STAR and help drive those issues. But the GitLab one was really interesting because I was just intrigued by the notion of having all of the employees truly virtual and working remotely. And I was also struck by the onboarding process. And it just seemed like they had such a strong cultural infrastructure to enable, you know, people to collaborate and work together. And I was really intrigued by the continuous integration tool around how the code and the software kind of continually flows into that common code base. And I don't know how it works. There's some sort of magic to it, but I was really intrigued by that and just seeing, you know, the extent to which they could work virtually remotely with no physical brick and mortar infrastructure.
Right. Yeah, that was an interesting article. Something that was, what was interesting is kind of looking through, you know, some of their things, and they were talking about their DRI, directly responsible individual. They actually borrowed that from Apple. And we also, when I was at Qualcomm in our software organization, that was kind of a something that they attempted to layer in. And as our head of software said, one throat to choke, which was really kind of, I'm not sure that sent the right message, but anyway, it's kind of an interesting article. All right. I think that at this point, Tanya probably has another poll. Am I right, Tanya? It's been a while since I've done this, and the polls are new. So, yes, interesting. The article where you experience tension with the content. So I'd love to. It's kind of a tough question.
And it might be the articles this month were so good, we're not feeling it because the responses are coming in slower.
We're all thinking.
They were all so amazing that you just...
We liked our articles.
Yep. All right, I'll give it another couple seconds and then share the results. Not easy, three-way tie.
All right, so the three that popped out are the task uncertainty article that came from one of the consultants at On the Mark. It was a very kind of practical article. And then the power dynamics that was from someone at, I think she's at Michigan. And then the design of corporate headquarters. So that was actually an article from the Journal of Organization Design. So we don't often have their articles. So really interesting to hear kind of the tensions. So I'm going to close the poll and then I'm, you know, just going to check in. Janet, do you want to sort of share kind of where you felt the most tension in the articles?
So I think I'm going with personal tension. Interesting how many people said that they really liked the psychological safety article. For me, that was the one that was least inspiring. But it may be because I have a background in psychology. And so just kind of, I know this stuff. I think that really was just the bottom line. Maybe there's another little piece, and that was that the one that used the STAR model. Because I have a model that I use myself, and I kind of feel some stuff is missing. So there's always this thing going on inside of me, but what about this and what about that? So, you know, one of the elements that I talk about is character and maturity, and I don't see it showing up in these very mechanistic models.
Interesting. Jardina.
So the one that created the most tension for me is the one about task, what is it called? Task uncertainty. So a few things, I mean, a lot came up there in terms of, you know, he talks about collaboration and coordination, but it was mostly about coordination. And I felt like I was longing for more about, he talked about the social collaboration, but I was longing for more of that human interaction in the article versus just the strict coordination of handoffs. And also kind of missing the conversation about minimizing handoffs and working together more. So it's unfortunate that being remote kind of necessitates that coordination becoming more, playing a more front and center role. But I felt like it made it very, I don't know, very process oriented. And that the other part of it too, that was, I was having like this reaction to was, the author wrapped a linear process around all of that complexity, which always makes me like, oh, I don't know. Like once you start creating a really complicated process, it makes me feel like I want to pull back and go, wait a minute, what's going on here? So when I was reading through that big long process of how to do the task coordination, I was feeling overwhelmed by it and just like, I felt like it didn't fit.
I had a similar reaction to that as well. And when I got through it, I said, well, geez, in this, what Sue Mormon talks about integration mechanisms. And it just seemed like it was reframing that effort and made it more complex and more complicated that I think we normally do when we're really looking at integration and coordination among different functions.
Right. I guess too, I kind of reacted as well because there's this very sort of detailed, as you say, linear process. And then there's a sort of throwaway line, or you can just give this article to the team and let them figure it out. So I was like, okay. So that just kind of sort of landed a wrong note with me. Paul, I can see you look like ready to say something.
Because I picked the same one. I was disappointed in Dan's article for a lot of what, couple of the reasons that you just heard, but I thought first, talking about task uncertainty is pretty simplistic. There's no conversation about interdependence, right, which to me would be a more important criteria around creating the right collaboration coordination mechanisms, right? So I was disappointed that it was a very simplistic, you know, where are you on this continuum from certainty to uncertainty, without looking at all these other dynamics, which to me, you know, whether it's pooled, sequential, reciprocal, whatever the interdependence is, should help define what kind of mechanisms you're creating. So I was disappointed in that. I was disappointed in the very superficial, simplistic take on lateral processes and coordination, right? Jay wrote the book, I don't even remember how many years ago, on lateral processes. And I thought there could have been a more of an acknowledgement of that. The list of things to do was interesting, but there wasn't anything, you know, I was longing for more. And then finally, you know, there's, I think it's Kaidel talked about centralized, decentralized, right? And autonomous versus decentralized, you know, and he talked about the need for the third dimension, which is all about cooperation, collaboration. And so it's not as simple as it was presented there. And I found it lacking.
There's some interesting discussion in the chat on this very topic, Janet and Jardina. I don't know if everyone's seen that, about kind of that continuum of, you know, cooperation, coordination, collaboration, and just kind of an interesting point, you know, whether kind of where the complexity lies, I think, you know, as Jardina says, coordination is more complicated, but not more complex, you know, sort of many steps versus outcomes that are unpredictable. So kind of really interesting point. So maybe we found this kind of, in some ways, the least useful article, but it's generated a lot of thought around this whole area of, you know, coordination, collaboration. Great, thank you. Jody, your thoughts?
Okay, well, I voted for the article on power dynamics by Lindy Greer, but not because I didn't like it. but I really wanted to choose one. And actually, I think the reason was that that particular article, I found it to be, it seemed to have a lot more influence on leadership behavior and personal behavior. And to me, it seemed to miss a little bit of connecting it with the bigger picture and design. Having said that, I saw her presentation at the ODC conference. I don't know if anyone saw that, and I thought it was really fantastic. I think it was on hierarchical flex, or maybe it was dynamic hierarchy. There were two presentations, and they played around with how hierarchy works. So I think that article is probably part of an even bigger picture, but I wasn't seeing that connection as much in the article.
Great. Diane.
So again, first, I'm glad we changed how we phrased that question, because it used to be your least favorite and I wouldn't have come up with one. But because we said tension, I picked the Org Design for Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion, because I felt some tension as I was reading it. So I turned it around a little bit. You know, just kind of back to what others have said, as I was reading some of the questions, I thought about practices I've seen. And also, one of the things I liked is when she called out about informal networking, personal relationships, they're the glue of the fabric, but they can also be a prime source of exclusion. So it's like I could relate to some of the things, and it created some tension as I was reading it. So tension in a good way. That's why I picked that article.
Fantastic, thank you. And then last but not least, Gina, I see you've been adding stuff in the chat as well.
Yeah, just on that one article everyone was talking about, I think, absolutely nice summary of what we've been doing for years, work categorization, prioritization, building connections. I thought the opportunity there was to take the lens of experience or jobs to be done. I mean, the same work has to be done, but you just pivot how you look at it differently. So that was a tie. But actually, my least favorite article was the advert for the graduate program. The hippopotamus story was cute. But I didn't find it terribly useful. And I should say that tension for me is wasting my time because I'm doing all this to grow, not to, stay the same. The thing with that, what would be interesting and adding on to that other article around the power shift is what seems to happen is you can do all these DRIs and you can make the different decision structures and have the best of intentions, but I think we lose sight of the fact that information is power. And so what's sitting next to that is people communicate within the hierarchy. So they make all these plans, but then you've still got staff meetings and cascades and sometimes location, you're limited by that. So if you haven't changed that whole communication structure sitting next to that, your DRI, then you're still going to have that power imbalance. And that would be the interesting thing to do, to research, is why do people feel like they can't break that? Or why can't they break that? Why can't they get out of staff meetings and cascades and the different ways that information is shared?
So that makes me think of the INSEAD article that Nuts and Bolts on GitLab, because there's no email, everything's done through Slack, and so it just kind of is the kind of counterpoint to just what you were talking about. So really interesting. Yeah, thank you. All right. Tanya, do we have another poll? I can't remember.
Nope, usually now it's just you kind of take a deeper dive into...
Right, okay. Yep. So we just had the two poll questions. As I said, it's been a while since I've done this and there are all these new and improved things. So I'm just going to kind of open it up at this point to just kind of, just general impressions, things that really resonated with you or race questions. So I'm just curious kind of where kind of this set of articles landed on folks.
I just had an observation on the Campbell article. I think we all understand the importance of making sure we've got the corporate headquarters and the corporate office, designed right. But then he talks about, it's not really a design process. But then he goes on and talks about defining the roles of the corporate office, defining the relationship between the corporate office and the business units and the different functions. And so what he talks about is it actually is a design process for looking at what the relationship is between the corporate headquarters and other parts of the organization.
Anyone want to take that one on, chime in on that?
Just an observation.
Observation.
Yeah. Right. Said it's not really a design process, but then he lays it out as a design process.
Hello. Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to change topics, so go ahead if you're still on this.
No, please, feel free.
So one that I didn't vote for loving or having tension with was the one about GitLab, but I'd love to have more of a discussion about it because, and I don't know if we've had, I don't recall other articles about GitLab on this call, but it's fascinating to look at from a design perspective because essentially they're taking open source software and creating an open source org design, right? That's what they're doing. They're modeling the org design after their software. And I think, and they didn't really go into it too much in the article. I would love to hear if other folks are sort of have experienced open source org design and how that's worked. And I mean, they're forced to do it because they're all remote, which is the point of the article, but it's a pretty innovative org design model, I think.
The two things with that, so their onboarding, I put it in the chat as well, that onboarding guide is considered the gold standard for remote work and has been for several years. It's been out there for a while, so there really isn't anything better that anyone's written about or noticed than that book. The second thing with them, and to draw from that article, and we're living this now, is the importance of asynchronous work. that everyone says that, and then they don't really know what to do. And that no email is forcing that public, you know, getting the information public. What seems to be happening with everyone that's transitioning is they haven't separated. What they're doing is separating the information from the person. And with knowledge work especially, it's very hard to get tangible rewards. And so people work 70 hours a week substituting visibility. And that's kind of still happening even remotely. And so really driving that separation of information is the critical thing that I think that they do well. In addition to everything you just said, but that's the actual behavior is forcing it to be out there as opposed to something that you're, you know, back to what we were saying earlier about information being power.
Love it.
Well, I put in the chat, I mean, I know of a couple of fairly large companies that are started literally virtually, have never had an office, you know, and I think the point, Gina, that you're making about enculturation and, you know, on it's, I shifted years ago my languaging from new employee orientation to enculturation, right? Because it is all about how do you create culture, socialize people, have them understand what it is, have them have the foundational skills to live and work in the kind of workplace you're imagining, right? There's this good story about an old CRM company that used to take all of their cohorts of new hires to Las Vegas and give them all $1,000 to bet on one spin of the wheel, right? And if they hit their number, they got the money, and if they didn't, they owed the company the $1,000, right? And when asked why the hell he would do that, he said, you know, because every day it's like spinning the wheel. We hope we win, but we don't. If you're not willing to spin the wheel, you're not the kind of person that we want to have here, right? You know, and so there's a lot about enculturating people to understand and collaborate and work in the kind of way you want as a foundational skill. I love the article also because I think there's a question about, you know, how long does that social collateral exist? Does it rub off? Does it wear off, right? How long can we live in this virtual workplace world without physically coming together and actually getting in the same room somehow, right? What's the distance and all that? So, you know, but I thought there are some growing examples in the US and other places where, you know, they're learning how to live this way and how to enculturate and onboard people in a way that can sustain it much longer than we would have ever imagined.
I agree. I work for a consulting company that's totally virtual. We don't have offices. But the difference now is that we still had like 4 times a year we would all get together. There's still one-on-one coffee meetings. It's like that's what's changed. We're completely virtual, but boy, we're missing out on those things. And that's where some of the culture thing is, it comes. So like GitLab, we're totally virtual, but this is different.
Yeah. So I just want to add in one more thing about the GitLab. So for those of you who are not software engineers, the original open source of Git, not GitLab, but is that anyone can contribute to the code, right? Like it's not highly controlled. And I feel like that's kind of what they're doing with the organization is, like, it's so adaptive that anyone is not just that it's remote, but it's so adaptive that anybody can contribute to the structure, right? Or tweak the structure, not without approval and not without consensus, but that it's totally open for change, which is really super cool, I think.
Can I maybe add into what Georgina's just said? I don't know if this is something any of you've come across, but in my research this week, I came across a concept called competitive benchmarking. And essentially, it is software-based system for decision-making. And my research is on wicked problems. And so they're looking at ways to get people to collaboratively work out solutions to pretty major systemic problems. And I just found that really interesting. And there's a similar ethos behind the two sort of systems. You know, GitLab sounds like they're collaboratively building this company workbook, this onboarding system, And I kind of come across that in a very different context during the course of the week. And I think what's important about that is recognizing that this is one of the ways in which technology potentially is going to aid collaborative processes and support possibly better decision making. One of the things that they're built into this process is an element of competition and gamification as well. So that it's not just find a solution, but build a better solution. And yeah, really, really interesting stuff.
Interesting. Was that interesting conversation in the chat? Rahul, thank you for that comment about, if folks can see it, tools like Slack, Confluence, Vanilla, that how great they are in terms of, you know, sort of chat. Oops, I'm losing my chat. Let it go. But, it, you know, sort of instantaneous communication, not necessarily one of deeper conversations, which conventional email provides. So, you know, it's really kind of, are we compromising on creating deeper sharing and knowledge creation if we live on chit-chat tools? And then Paul's chimed in, Jardina, Jody. So quite the conversation here about depth of conversation and interpersonal connections are important. Yeah. The sort of fragmentation of lack of holistic thinking. Yeah.
Well, the other side of the asynchronous work is obviously synchronous work. And so that's the strategy and the design challenge is figuring out, you know, what is the optimal time to get to come together and whom, you know, and what we said about the earlier, you know, you have far fewer limits than we used to in terms of geography and the hierarchy and who can be there and across the organization and that sort of thing. So I think that's the key design challenge going forward is thinking about those kind of problems.
Right. Interesting.
The issue, you know, is sort of how do you replicate the experience of being together, right, in a virtual world? And sort of, you know, Peter Block said contact before content, right? And which I think is, well, what you're talking about at that deeper level, right? And, you know, and how do you do that? And I think, Jordy, you raised the question too. And it's, and then once you build it, you know, I think the other question is how sustainable is it in this virtual world for how long, right? You know, I think that, you know, the remote article sort of touches the tip of a big iceberg and we're all experimenting with and living in the moment. You know, so quite interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, so quite the conversation going on there. Thank you. Yeah, tone is by emoji. There we go. Right. Okay, so other thoughts, and I'm happy to have any of our observers. And I apologize. We normally do a quick summary of the articles, and of course I forgot to do that. But if anyone, you know, sort of just from listening to the conversation, or you know, I'd love to just invite everybody, anyone who'd like to chime in at this point, to chime in.
Something I'd like to say. My name is Tim. I'm just lurking here. I jumped on in midstream. Didn't do my homework, so you know, there you go. The thing about context is interesting in that so much as I think we fail to appreciate the value of context, and so the context we have here in a disconnected way or remotely or virtual way is very different than the visceral in the room. Momentary molecular cellular sort of communication context that evolves. And I think that it's just a piece of what's missing is the ability to somehow feel and think together in a connected physical space. We this is what we got. And it's, you know, it's a somewhat of a approximate facsimile, but not quite the same thing. So it's the notion of context as a element in consciousness and communication is often maybe underlooked because it's in the background. And it is somewhat emergent in this conversation about how our context for things is very discontinuous and disconnected and strangely different. Now we'll get better at it, but still it's a part of the equation that's we're replacing.
You know, I have an alternative viewpoint on that, actually. And that is that the majority are the digital natives, the millennials, the Gen Ys, the Gen Zs. This is how they connect. They've been doing it since forever. And I think it's only really that I've observed those of us who are beyond that period of time that finds it disconnected, because they're constantly, like, I'm on video chats and discussions and collaborations and whiteboards and all of that constantly. And I've got a college age daughter and she's always connected. So I'm thinking we need to think about our own assumptions and our perspectives and our own filters regarding that, and have a better utilization of the tools, et cetera. So I'm thinking that's something just for consideration. Mm-hmm. The other thing that I'm noticing in all of the thread in the conversation is that I'm hearing a fundamentally at a socio-technical level, right? We all know that all jobs have a fundamental socio-technical component. And I think what's happening is everyone quickly had to go to virtual work. It was coming anyway. It was already projected, right? It's just the pandemic pushed it out faster. But in this world, we're taking care of the technical component, but not the socio component. So it's just, it's again, just the basics of sociotech in organization and connecting the people, effectively, emotionally. And, I revel in the fact that I have an office, a dedicated office, and I don't have interruptions, right? But I can totally feel for those who are working parents or, they're converting their kitchen table into a classroom and dinner, and everyone's, they don't have a chance to actually engage fully in their role and disconnect from another role. So I'm thinking that's some of the basics of what's going on here. They're certainly not insurmountable. We just need to catch up and get help, help in that regard.
You made two excellent points, Teresa. I've been wondering about that, the social aspect of work, because I read recently that like 20 years ago, 50% of people met their significant others through work, one way or the other. And now it's 50% online. I mean, it literally just flipped, how much. So I wondered what are people's social expectations now that they're, like you said, like your college age daughter is online all the time. Maybe the social expectations for work have changed. And the second point you made is around location. I think, some people do have that, and I'm always amused when I have calls with a lot of people from California, because I can always see a neatly made bed in the background, whereas, some of us don't have those kind of space constraints. I'm wondering that if work, we previously thought of work as home or office, maybe it's multiple places. Maybe people need to be
right.
Real estate, there need to be centers, there need to be, there are just different kinds of things like that. So I think that concept of place needs to change, as well as asking, what are our new social expectations around work. And in your point about challenging our assumptions, those of us who remember the pre-internet days, yes, absolutely.
Yeah, they are connecting. This is what they expect, right? And when we look at, I participated in the IRI's future study of the future of work for the next 25 years. And the projection was that this is how we're going to be working. We're going to even be utilizing avatars as well, so we can be in multiple places, similarly. And, work, home, it'll be on the phone. It'll be wherever we are. So it's just like we need to expand, in my mind, our thinking on what is an employee, what is an organization, what is a connection. Just like, forget that. It's just, we need to be wherever we are is work. But I do believe that strongly that the foundations of what we all understand of socio-technical components of jobs, they have to be paid attention to, and they need to just shift, right? It's the foundations, but just shift the application. And I think we can help to, they can help to get there. But that's what I'm hearing in the thread of your conversation of what seems to be missing for many. So thank you for the comment, Gina.
Other thoughts,
I'd be curious for the group. The article from Journal of Organization Design around location was written before we did this. Would you have a different lens looking at it now? I mean, I went back and looked at it again, And I thought you still have a strategic aspect of your HQ, that maybe mm-hmm. there's a different kind of an angle, like what I said. Maybe it's more of a brand. Maybe it's more of a a community kind of thing. You know, there's a different purpose. I thought that probably, but I still thought it was valid that the HQ is a strategic element. What was everyone else's take? Did anyone get to it? It was a bonus.
I did. I was just thinking about what my take is. I think it's valuable even if it's not a physical location, I guess. So I loved the strategic. I love this, make sure you're not subtracting value. That was like the do no harm was one of my big takeaways from that. And then limiting how many things you're focusing on. I think those things all apply, even mm-hmm. even if it's a remote corporate headquarter team.
Okay, thanks, Jardina. That was my take. That was my thought as well. I thought this all still seems relevant. I mean, it is a strategic branding aspect, whatever form it takes.
I'm curious.
No, it's funny.
I was going to ask Jody because I know you sent the article out to folks.
Well, I really hesitated when you asked the question, Gina, because I was like, well, I wasn't even thinking about the physical headquarters when I was reading the article. I was thinking so much about what's the value, you know, value add and value subtract. And I'm just reflecting whether the reason I didn't think about it as a physical headquarters is because I've just, you know, forgotten all about physical workspaces now.
Yeah, it just reinforced, you know, you always hear people in the field talking about corporate headquarters. Now they're mucking things up or they're creating obstacles or they're really not adding value. They're the subtracting value part of it that I thought was interesting.
But yeah, ad hoc, I have heard, you know, several organizations in transition talking about how they're moving away from centralized headquarters now because of everyone's working remote. So they're feeling much more comfortable to distribute the headquarter functions, which is interesting. Sorry, Diane, I think I interrupted you.
Okay. Yeah, there was one phrase, the power of the vital few, and someone else mentioned it. The takeaway for me was corporate headquarters. And I wasn't thinking physically, I was thinking more a group. Trying to add value in too many ways. So just that choice and kind of the mucking it up, you get your hands into too many things. So there was that little power hook for me too.
When I read it, I thought, you know, I didn't think about it so much as physical or virtual as much as I thought it conjures up, there are different operating models and mindsets for what should be centralized. Right, or what the value contribution is of some coordinating and linking mechanism like a corporate headquarters, right? You know, whether it's the ABB or the Handelsbanken or, you know, which are probably on the minimum critical to the bigger. And then you go to Google, send everybody home, even though they spent billions building headquarters, right? You know, so you say, well, boy, that was a big waste of money.
Yeah, that was ironic.
Right. You know, but I didn't think about it so much as physical space. For me, the article sort of raised this question about, you know, what's the value contribution and what's the coordinating and linking mechanism requirements from a socio-technical perspective. And it also, you know, underlying it is there's a lot about culture, right? I mean, every time you create another entity, you create another boundary to manage in some way, right? So I didn't actually think about it as physical.
I'm hearing a new term is instead of corporate headquarters, it's just core, the role of the core. So that core engenders more of a nucleus and is completely not at location in any way. So I'm hearing already a shift to that terminology, like what is the role of the core? With the assumption that many things will be distributed.
Yeah, and my bias there, I asked the question, I still am thinking there's some kind of, now of course, you know, my bias is coming from having been a consultant my whole life, the offices are a branding aspect, you know, you take clients there and, you know, you showcase your projects and the things you've done, and sometimes you have a lab and, you know, there's these different things that that are physical, and that's my bias. I mean, maybe that doesn't need to be, that can be virtual as well.
I think
as far as the big headquarters, I've been thinking they should repurpose them as homeless shelters. That would work everywhere, right? Because they're all in these locations that have huge problems. I mean, that would be a win-win.
Another aspect the IRI identified with the future of work and talent management was that people were not going to be aligned. It would transition away from aligning to a corporation, mm-hmm. an entity, and instead align to their profession, much like what we do here. And they would do more of a Hollywood model is what they're calling it, but it's nothing more than consulting, like project-based work, right? So with that evident, the belief is that people will move to a location, a physical location in an area of their, that they prefer. And they already know, they've already identified 6 places in the world where they believe people will congregate to. So people will go to a place that they enjoy, right? That's where they live, but their work will be themselves. It'd be, you know, we were thinking gig economy, but it's going to be even more than that. And mm-hmm. they believe strongly that corporations are going to struggle when we think about brand on being a large entity, because so many things will be print. And when I say the print will be prototype, if you will, even to the point that with so much prototyping, they believe it'll do away with the whole concept of IP, because everything will be prototype. So I'm thinking we just really need to expand and look at what is the true nature of work, what is the true nature of how we do work, utilizing our same principles. It's still human beings gathered together, you know, to produce something that they feel aligned to. It's just the way that we do it will be different.
Great. All right. Well, I'm going to bring us to a halt on that. Very interesting point, Teresa. Thank you so much. There's a great list of things in the chat. I know Tanya saves all that, including a really cool reference from Janet. Thank you on competitive benchmarking. And at this point, I'm going to pass it over to Tanya, who will kind of explain what happens next. And just say thank you, everyone, for a really interesting conversation. For me this morning, I know not everybody's in the California time zone, but thank you.
Well, the only thing I'll just remind is we will send out a notice to everybody who registered to let you know when the recording and the chat for this is downloaded and available on our website. So if there's something you wanted to refer back to, it'll be there for you. And I know Jody is working with Duyen Bui from Boeing on an upcoming conversation on DE&I efforts and how it's tied to organization design. So that'll be September 16th, and we're going to announce that here in the next week or so and put that on. And that'll be just an open conversation, what we're calling our pop-up conversations. And we've got a few other things that are going to be coming up and getting on the calendar for the start of fall. And I'm saying fall because I want fall to be here and summer to leave Phoenix, Arizona.
Yeah, we're having a heat advisory here today in San Diego, 100 degrees at the coast.
Yeah.
Crazy. So, and for those of you who are anywhere near the hurricane coming in, hoping you're safe and well, and it does not turn out to be anything like they're anticipating. So we will hope that for you.
Yeah.
Take
care, everyone.
All right, everyone. Take care.
Thank you, everyone. Have a great rest of the day. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Take care, everyone. Bye-bye.
Bye.